Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Judy. It's me. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, got you fine.
Great. I'm sorry you took a spill recently.
Hey, stuff happens.
Say, first thing I want to say is I hope we can talk again. I know when we're done, I'm going to have questions. I'm going to say, oh, man, I didn't ask that question, and I didn't ask this question.
Okay, so how do you want to roll this out?
Well, it's interesting how we met. but why don't we start with how this all began for you, and what were your feelings on this subject before it happened?
Okay, so are we recording?
Yes.
Okay, well... the first time I encountered something different was I had family that lived in Washington State, and my uncle was a truck driver, and they lived out of White Salmon, and the first thing that happened, us kids were staying in a trailer that they had way out at the back of the property. And I believe that there were six of us, three boys and three girls, all cousins. And we were playing cards inside the trailer, and it was dark outside. And all of a sudden, something started shaking the trailer and growling. And at that point, we'd heard of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, as they preferred to be called.
Oh.
And, but, you know, we figured we'd never see one or hear one. And, it went on for quite a while. It was pounding on the door and you know, making all kinds of noise. And eventually, I'm not sure why, but we all fell asleep, you know, and we were just kind of a pile of kids on the middle of the floor. And we woke up before daylight, and we headed back to the house and woke the parents up, and of course, you know, they didn't believe us. And so that night when my uncle came home from work, his face was white as a sheet when he got there. So the way that you got into the property was a cutout between two hills, and it was red clay. And it was probably 20 feet from one side to the other, and he was driving a logging truck. And out of the corner of his eye, he saw this huge hairy foot and leg step over into the middle of the log truck and go and take another step over to the other side.
Wow.
And yeah, when he got home, I mean, he was shaken like a leaf. And my uncle wasn't known for being extremely honest. You know, he had a reputation for someone else having to call his dog for him.
Huh.
And so, you know, Dad didn't believe him.
What?
So wait a second. So his log truck was parked underneath this great big huge light. And they took a couple ladders and they crawled up on top of the truck. And right in the middle of the cab was this huge footprint. And it couldn't have been anything else. It couldn't have been a rock, because in that area it was all clay. And there were, you know, there were pieces of clay all around it, and it was human shaped. And so they went out the next morning, and they found footprints on both sides of the road up in the clay.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah. And so, you know, Dad didn't say anything. And then the second encounter was Willow Creek, California. We were working in a band at that point, and we were the headliners, and we got into town the night before and checked into the hotel. And the next morning, we were to meet the owner of the logging company because he was our sponsor. And so we met him at the Little Bigfoot Cafe there in Willow Creek. And we hadn't been there for very long. And his two sons came storming into the restaurant, and they were both scared to death and really excited. And they came in and reported that when they got up to the logging camp, everything had been destroyed. They'd had trouble before that, you know, things coming in and tearing apart their lunch boxes and, you know, pushing pickups around and stuff like that, but it was never anything serious. Well, today was something different. When they got up there, they had a D9 cat, and it was turned over on the cage, and something huge had got up onto the treads and stomped the cage flat. And they had a big loader, and it had taken the arm off the loader and beat the rest of the loader to death with it. And that was just a little bit of the damage. I mean, pickups were shoved over the edge of the canyon. And I mean, they destroyed everything. And my dad wanted to go up and see it, but they wouldn't let him because, of course, he was their star. And they wanted to protect him. And then years and years went by, and now I'm married and I have a family, and I live in the foothills of the Cascades. And so I've always believed in Sasquatch, but I always thought he was a North American great ape, like so many people do. But now I know different. So my husband and I are hunters, and the first encounter here has been, it was about 6 years ago, and we were hunting up above Sweet Home, and they had been logging, and the area still had burn piles, and they were smoking. And so I was dogging the area, and I got about three quarters of the way around it, and I heard a wood knock, and it couldn't have been anything else. But being a logical person, my brain started ticking, and I'm looking at the way that the smoke's going up in the sky, and there was absolutely no wind. The smoke was going straight up, and you know, and there wasn't anything else it could have been. And so when I got it back to the pickup, I didn't say anything to my husband. And so we hunted for a little while longer. And when we went home, I told him, you know, while we were up there by the burn, I heard a wood knock. And he looked at me and he said, why didn't you say anything? Mm. And I said, well, I had to process it. Now, if you want me to stop at any point, let me know, Albert.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So the next thing that happened, and this was 2 years ago, and this was the pivotal moment in how I looked at Sasquatch. We were, again, up above Sweet Home, and so much of that area is gated off, and it's hard to find a place to hunt. But we found this area where we could park our pickup, and we had our choice of going to the left or the right. And the right was, we chose the right because my husband wears a prosthesis, and it was easier for him to walk across. Mm. It was flat. And so we were walking under alder trees, and so we had some light filtering in. And we came to a corner, and when I'm out hunting, I'm looking at the ground, looking for sign, looking for prints, and there were a lot of them. But we come up to this place where there was an 8x6 scorched area. There was nothing else around it that showed signs of being burnt. Just that 6 foot by 8 foot rectangle. And Neil looks at me and he goes, well, do we keep going? And there was a corner in front of us. And I wasn't feeling uncomfortable. So we walked around the corner and we were at the edge of the fir trees. And it looked for all the world like something huge had taken those branches and created a tunnel out of the fir branches. And it must have been 10 feet tall, and it was completely dark on the inside. And my spidey senses started tingling. And Neil looked at me and he said, well, do we keep going? And before I could answer him, I heard this very deep voice in my head. And it said, you can't go in there. Now, I'm a Christian, and my gifting is that of discernment, which means that I'm close with the Holy Spirit. I've heard his voice many times. Well, this voice that I heard was not the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at Neil and I said, did you hear that? And he said, did I hear what? And I said, did you hear that voice? And he said, no. And I said, well, according to that voice, we're not supposed to go in there. And so we turned around and we came home. And that was the day before the last day of hunting season. So we, on the way home, we talked about it. And we decided that we would go out the next morning and take the left fork. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard the voice again. And it said very loudly, you're not supposed to go. And I said, okay. And I went back to sleep. And when the alarm went off at 4 o'clock in the morning and my husband started getting up, I said, where are you going? And he goes, we're going hunting. And I said, no. And then I told him about the voice. Well, you know, I had no idea what was going on. And I listened to a podcast by David Nino Rodriguez, and he's out of Texas. And he had this man on whose name is Steve Isdall. Steve Isdall is many things. He's a world-class hunting and fishing guide who lives in British Columbia, but he also is an experiencer of Sasquatch, and he's had a podcast for years. Originally, it was all about the hunting and fishing, but as he had experiences with these beings, he's had to set up a new one. And it's called The Facts by How to Hunt. So Neil and I started listening. And boy, did I learn a lesson. These aren't animals. They're 97% human. They have a language. They have emotions. They have tribes. They lived with the Native Americans before the white men came. So, and this is the important part. They're telepathic. And that's the voice that I heard.
Okay, stop there. I think we're about to meet your friend. So let's review. Thank you for telling me that they prefer Sasquatch, That makes so much sense. And now you're saying they have a tribe connection and therefore have some knowledge that Sasquatch was an approved Indian name for these beings.
Yes.
Also, you mentioned a Willow Creek. How was it to visit Willow Creek at that time? I was there about 5 years ago. Still a Bigfoot capital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, back then, I was about 17, and I was a little bit boy crazy. And what grabbed my attention wasn't the Sasquatch.
Oh.
It was the two good-looking guys that came to warn us.
Well, hopefully you took a lot of pictures.
Oh, we did.
Okay, then looking back at those pictures, maybe there were some Bigfoot murals, Bigfoot statues.
Oh, they're everywhere down there.
By the way, did you stay at the Bigfoot Motel?
Yes, we did.
Great.
Yeah, it was. It's an interesting place, and if you're interested in Sasquatch, I would recommend going down there. To this day, there are tons of sightings. So, yeah, it's a place if you want to go squatching.
Great. Later, you mentioned going hunting and hearing wood knocks. Had you heard of wood knocks before that happened?
I'd heard of them, but I'd never heard one.
I experienced wood knocks once, and it was a feeling like, oh yeah, that could be nothing else.
Yeah.
Were the wood knocks like communication one to another, or maybe a message to you?
I think it was a message to me. I think it was a warning to get out of there.
And then they had to get in your head. They really wanted to protect you.
Yes. Yes. So, so this is how that happened. So my husband and I have family in Redmond, and we go once a month to see them. And so that morning, as we were on our way, we were taking Highway 20. And at the point where that was adjacent to where I had heard the voice, I reached out and I said, I know what you did. Thank you. You probably saved my life. And all of a sudden, I felt this huge, hairy set of arms wrap themselves around me. And I heard his voice say, you're welcome. My name is Tinker. And, you know, some people say that they're evil. I don't agree with that, because the only thing I have ever felt from them is just this sheer, incredible sense of love.
So,
and
the one that destroyed the equipment years earlier, that's a topic someday we could discuss. Some people think they're evil. Some think they're loving. Is it just that some are having a bad day, or there's an agenda by a darker force for some of them? And I admit that's a conversation for another day, probably. So,
well, if you want my opinion on that, Albert, it's very simple. In many ways, they're just like humans. And, you know, 90% of humanity is awesome. Then you have the other 10% or 20% or whatever that aren't. And it's a choice that they make. Or it's from things that have happened to them, experiences that have been negative. And And I think that plays into who or what they are.
Would you say that belonging to a clan keeps them more stable, where the rogue ones don't?
Absolutely. Yeah, the rogue ones, well, most of the rogue ones that I've heard about have been kicked out of the clan for whatever reason. So, yeah, and there are definitely rogue ones. But so far, I haven't encountered any.
I've often wondered what happens when a rogue Sasquatch meets up with another rogue Sasquatch.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, do they become evil together? Or maybe they don't like each other?
Well, what does humanity do?
I think we find for like-minded people.
Yeah, I think so. And I, you know, there's no reason that wouldn't be the same with Sasquatch. Remember, they're 97% human, and that's been proven over and over again. Don't let anybody tell you that we don't have DNA of them. There are thousands of samples of DNA.
Right. I've often told people, or in discussion, that the idea of half human, half non-earthly DNA, that would be biblical. But you're saying 97%. So I could say,
yes.
I could say in Genesis 6, half mom DNA, half non of this earth father DNA, and a lot of the DNA they find for Sasquatch is that the mom is human DNA, the dad is unknown.
Right.
Now, the percentage, could the percentage be different just by circumstance? However, unlike the Nephilim, what happened in Genesis 6, we're looking at a different mix.
Yes. Now, I get my information from a woman named Melba Ketchum. Go look her up.
I've heard good things. I like her.
Yes. Yeah. So she's, you know.
Yeah.
She's a very good source of information. She's honest, and she doesn't have any irons in that fire. You know, she's sharing what she knows, and she did that even though it lost her job, her profession, and her standing in the community. So that's a brave woman right there.
Yeah. Have you ever corresponded?
No, haven't had the chance to.
Right. I've heard that she, you know, keeps out of the limelight because of all the stones that have been thrown her way by, you know, what I might call the other side of all this.
Yes. Yep, that's true.
So I'm curious about Tinker, but I'm also curious about that other 3%. A lot of the questions I have are the mind speak, the size, the ability to elude people, maybe the ability to cloak. That all must come from that 3%, because I know in general, we 100% humans can't do that.
Well, I have to disagree there. Back when we were first created, we had all of those capabilities. And through the years, we've lost them. Or they've been taken from us. Now that's, you know, that's my standpoint. Not everybody's going to agree with that. But me, for instance, my gifting is that of a discerner. And what that means is I see and hear things other people don't. Like, for instance, I hear Tinker clearly, and my husband does not. And when he's, and you've seen me talk to him when you can't see him.
Right.
But, you know, I'm always aware when he's there. And he just popped in right now. So he's here with us.
I love that. Hello.
He said hi.
I appreciate that.
And he's, I forgot to ask him permission if I could do this.
Okay.
But he's fine with it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I love learning about this.
So, anyway, more questions?
Yes. What if the Sasquatch clan, in general, God has a purpose for, and they have not sinned like as much as the rest of us have? So maybe their brain is unlocked for God's purpose, and therefore they can use more of it, and thus the mind speak, and so on.
Well, you know, God has a plan for every single one of us. And these are God's children. When shortly after Tinker and I met, I asked him straight out, I said, "What do you think of Jesus?" And he very quickly answered, and he said, "Jesus is my brother." So, you know, and had that not been his answer or something similar, we would not be having this conversation.
Do you think that could also translate as brother, meaning love and friendship?
Yes.
But
yeah, the same way we think of Jesus, yes.
How about Savior?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So they have special abilities.
Yes.
How do you think that happened?
You know, that 3% that we don't know about, I think that's part of it. So let me tell you a story that happened this Christmas. Now, we've met Tinker's family, and he has a son, and until they reach their majority, we're not allowed to know their names. Oh. And this little boy he's probably 9, and we just call him Junior, and he's particularly attached to my husband. So we were ringing the bells at the Salvation Army, and this happened when you were there.
Right.
So there was a lull, and out of nowhere, this little Native American boy stepped up to Neil and looked at him very solemnly, walked up to him and said, "Can I have a hug?" And so Neil gave him a hug. And the little boy smiled at him and turned around and ran away and just disappeared. Now, you know, that. So when Neil told me that story, I sent a shout out to Tinker, and I asked him if that was Junior. And Junior popped in, and he got the cutest little look on his face. I mean, he had his hands up on his cheeks, and he was smiling. And, you know, with this just mischievous twinkle in his eye. And, yes, that was Junior. So they can shapeshift. They can literally be anything they want to be. We were up hunting, and we saw, three times we saw this, a single grouse on the side of the road. Now, anyone who know anything about hunting grouse know that it's very rare to see one alone. So I asked Tinker about it, and two of those times it was him. And he was watching out for us. Uh-huh. Because we encountered these people in a vehicle, and I was feeling extremely threatened by them. And we talked for just a minute, and then we took off. So he's very protective.
Sorry.
Yes.
The shape-shifting, that would explain a lot how they could stay hidden. They seem to disappear quickly. One thought I've had is they're in a different realm that is parallel to ours, and they can just step in and out of it.
Yes, they've been seen going in and out of portals.
And yet, the shape-shifting helps them, like you said, so that Junior could go to your husband for a hug and it wouldn't scare anybody, and Junior could still stay in secret, and the grouse also in secret.
Yes.
What would it take for them to show themselves as they are, or is the way we perceive a Sasquatch to look not their original form?
Oh, no. No, they're easily 10 foot tall. Sometimes at their maturity, the very oldest ones reach 20 feet. But they're all individuals just like we are. Some of them have a lot of hair, some don't. Some have, they all have different colored skin. Tinker's hair is very dark brown. Junior's is light brown with red streaks through it, and Tinker's wife Avery is blonde, and Tinker and Junior both have brown eyes, and Avery's are blue. So just like humans, they have, you know, they're different, they're all individuals. And there have been reports since ages and ages ago that they've actually interbred with humans. And so some of them look more human-like than others.
Okay. That would be a discussion. The dynamics of why that happens and how that happens.
Well, a lot of it comes from human women being kidnapped and human men being kidnapped.
To help the gene pool, perhaps?
Could be, or, you know, it could have been the bad ones, you know, looking for retribution. So, humanity is a puzzle to them. You know, they don't understand why we wear clothes. Now that gives you something to think about, doesn't it?
Now they don't wear clothes, but they are covered.
Yes.
Which is very convenient for living in the woodlands, and hides private parts.
Nope, doesn't do that. When you hear stories about the males,
right,
it's all out front.
People have said she was definitely a female or he was definitely a male. It was hanging out there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so do you remember about 3 years ago, there was a guy up above Foster who had his video camera out, and he was videoing the cliffs up above the lake. And all of a sudden, one of those areas where it looks like a great big ball of lava hit and lodged into the cliff face. Well, he was videoing that, and the ball opened. And inside was a cave, and he saw a being standing there. It didn't show up on the video. But in the video, you see the door close again. So there had to have been something back there. And an archaeologist or an anthropologist came up the next year. And she'd heard the stories, so she wanted to see. So she found the first cave with the lava bomb in it, and so she decided to see what else she could find. She found a second one, and So she decided that she would go and talk to the First Nations people there. Now, I've lived here for years and years, and I didn't know that there were First Nation people here. But apparently there are, and so she went and she talked to them, and they were very open with her. They knew that the Sasquatch were there. They knew that they lived in the caves, and they told her that there is also a smaller being about 2 feet tall that looked very much like Sasquatch, only they wore leathers like the natives do.
Yeah.
And they're mean.
Okay.
You don't mess with them.
Little people?
Little people. And they're called Little Feet. And if you talk to the First Nations people that live up there, they can direct you to areas like there's Littlefoot Creek, Littlefoot Meadow, you know.
Oh.
All over the place up there. So, and that's not the only thing that's up there. So, there are other beings up there as well.
You mentioned 3 years ago. No, I didn't hear about this. Where was this again?
Up above Sweet Home.
Oh, okay. So tell me about these other creatures.
Well, you know, we grew up with horror movies, right?
Right.
Okay. The most popular one being the Wolfman, werewolf, you know.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, those are real. And they're called Wolfman or Dogman. And they've been part of the First Nation culture for years. Oh, and something that people should know is, though I'm blonde-haired and green-eyed, I'm about three-quarter First Nation from three different tribes. So, and this is something that seems to be if you're tagged, like Neil and I are, that seems to be something that's required.
Okay.
So, anyway, and I know for a fact that the dog men are there. My home is completely protected. And one day I was in the living room, and this figure started materializing in my living room. And it got enough materialized that I knew what it was, and it was a dog man. And I rebuked it in the name of the Lord and sent it packing, and then I resealed the entire property. But, you know, it was an attempt, you know, to get to me.
So this is what Tinker's been protecting you from.
Absolutely. Yep. That and other things.
Okay.
And according to a friend of mine, we have a grove of fairies that live in that same area. And she has pictures.
We're still talking about Sweet Home, Oregon?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Way to go, Sweet Home. You know, I always felt a certain way when I drive through there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that and the mountains above it are very active. Very active.
I'm trying to imagine this activity in plain sight, but not being seen. That's a discussion right there. All this different concepts of going unseen and all this activity.
Right. Well, and you know, this is the thing. There's a Sasquatch research group that meets in Sweet Home. And Neil and I've been invited to join it. But the only thing is, when you go out actively searching for them, you rarely find them.
Mm.
If they want to be found, they'll find you. And I believe years and years ago that I was tagged. I grew up in the coastal range, and there was a river. Well, actually, there were three rivers that converged below our house. And my grandfather had taken his cat and dug out a swimming pool for us. And that's where we spent our summers. And most of us that lived up there were related. So, you know, we'd all get together during the summer. And as soon as breakfast was over, you know, we'd all meet up and we'd head down to the creek. And I was the youngest. I was 4 years old and was kind of a tag along. And one particular day, I was behind further than I had ever been. The other kids weren't paying any attention. And I remember standing there watching them go down the hill. And then the next thing I remember was about 6 hours later, and they were coming back up the hill. And I don't know what happened in the interim. I was perfectly fine. I was a dirty.
You lost time.
But yeah, I did. But I didn't feel unsafe or uncomfortable or threatened or like I'd been hurt. But I kind of have a feeling that that was truly my first encounter with these people. And at that point was when I was tagged.
Yeah, sounds like it. They took you. You can't remember that 6 hour period. Did they know to take you, or did they take you and then decide that you were tagged?
Oh, I think they knew exactly what they were doing.
Was this before or after the childhood encounter you shared first?
That was before.
Before. Okay. You came back dirty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, that wasn't uncommon up there.
Yeah.
We were kids playing in the dirt and the trees and, you know.
Yeah.
Mom expected us to be dirty. So, but I could tell you more stories.
I'd like that.
Okay. So I want people to understand how protective these beings are once you've been tagged. Okay. So a friend of mine and I were down in Waterloo, and we had our chairs in the middle of the river, and we were cooling off. And this bunch of guys and women were had floated the river and were putting in at the boat launch, and which is where we were sitting. So we moved over and let them come in. And the gentleman who was leading it at first was very pleasant. He was talking to us. And then it was like something demonic entered him. Now, this entire time, even, you know, while we were just sitting in the water, I knew the tribe was in the trees across the river from us. I could feel them watching. And so the minute that this guy changed and became, it's hard to describe, but he went from a nice guy to someone who was cussing and insulting us and saying gross, nasty things to us. And the minute that that happened, the tribe, who were invisible, moved out of the trees into the edge of the river. And if my friend and I hadn't gotten up, moved away, and went back to our cars, they would have taken care of it.
Wow.
That's how protective they are. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. About them being in the trees, I was going to ask, in what form? And you said invisible.
Yep.
Were they in the trees as themselves?
Yes.
Okay.
All shapes and sizes.
Wow. That was amazing. Thank you, Judy, for sharing. And we hate to split this phone call up into two portions, but that's what we're going to do. So to finish, just go to the next episode.